Welcome to Faith Uncut, a podcast where we explore faith in ways that might get you kicked out of most churches. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
And it's Women's History Month.
It is Women's History Month.
So we just on the heels of Black History Month, so we're going to segue into Women's History Month.
We're just going to drag the blackness into March.
Yeah, we're still black, so.
Yes. This is a beautiful time to celebrate black women.
It is. Black women out here doing lots of amazing things.
Yes, we are.
So we're talking about when black women lead. When black women lead.
Yes.
So this is kind of what happens, or what does that look like when black women lead?
Okay.
And we're going to talk about like why that is. But the reason why that's important is because I don't think this is something that we critically consider. The world hasn't seen this out front.
Mm-hmm.
In the black community, we've seen better examples of that.
Yes.
But now that we have women, let's say running for mayor of Chicago, two black women potentially running for the mayor of Chicago. We have Kamala Harris in the Democratic primary to be president of the United States.
We recently had Stacey Abrams in Georgia.
So it seems like we're approaching a point where women will be out. So it's not that it hasn't happened before.
Right.
But it's just this confluence now of many opportunities for the country
perfect
to
storm.
See that.
Yeah, perfect
and,
storm.
And so I think it's important for us to
kind of just go over that. It's important. This is not something that I don't think we've touched on. I just think that we've done it in a piecemeal fashion, because we've definitely discussed black women being viewed as or used as the backbone of the organizations that either they serve or are supposed to be designed to serve them, most notably our churches.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that when you take into account what it looks like when a member of what you call your diverse group or your marginalized group leads, you have to consider different perspectives and different priorities on what's important. And I think overall, that can only enhance, you know, what a movement is trying to accomplish, or what an organization is trying to accomplish, or, you know, just any group of people working in a team environment, whatever they're trying to overcome. And we talk about it all the time from an HR standpoint, that diversity is an overused term. But when you're working with diverse teams, you open yourself up not so much to just more problems, but you open yourself up actually to more possible solutions. This would be the same thing. So as women as a whole move themselves to the forefront, and just the examples that we see of female-led or female-majority bodies and how they impact data, how they impact a vote, how they impact the setting of policy priorities, it's important to consider what would happen if things were led by usually the group that is considered the least of these. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, and that's where we approach this conversation, because we know that there is an unwritten hierarchy in terms of priority in this country. You have white men, cis-hetero white men at the top of this. And what I mean by that is receiving the most benefit just by existing.
Yep.
And then the group starts to
trickle down.
Right. Receive fewer of those innate benefits as you go further down. And then, you know, getting closer to the bottom of that are black women.
Yes.
You know, you can go black trans women.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's which are black women. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is like that black women are not near the top of that.
And not at all.
There hasn't been lots of opportunities to be out front leading. But what happens when those who are not positioned to be at the top actually get a chance, things start to look different. You start to see things from a different lens, maybe things you hadn't considered before. One of those examples we talked about in another podcast, when women as theologians like Renita Weems and Yolanda Norton, and just lots of people started to have to express their voice through writing and able to be on stage, we start to see stories differently. So the story of Abraham and Sarah looks different once you start to see the Hagar story.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes up front now. Yep. And you're saying, well, how does, from a woman's perspective, they'll see Hagar as the slave and wonder, what does that look like? Or what is it like to exist as
that
person
position.
In that situation?
Yep.
And so as she leaves, There's a whole other story that we generally don't consider because we're so focused on the mainstream narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what putting those persons who haven't been up front in front actually gets us. And it's a net gain because we're able to round out our human experience,
mm-hmm.
because now we're including other voices that have been left out.
Absolutely true. I think that, you know, first of all, we're not bringing this up as if this type of leadership by this group has not been happening. It has been happening all the time. But do we consider what it means for a Black woman to rise to the point of leading, to actually feeling the full authority of her leadership abilities? It's not so much that you could be the executive, but what does it look like when you are the executive? It's not so much that you could be a spiritual leader and a senior pastor, but what does it look like when a church is pastored by a Black woman? What is the potential of that? What are the potential pitfalls of that? And something that came up in a previous podcast when we were kind of looking at midterm elections and things was the groupthink that occurs in this demographic and how they show up and how pretty much how you poll them on going into the voting booth is going to be how you poll them coming out. So we had extraordinary numbers where you saw this group cohesion, even if these people were not talking to one another. It is ridiculous to think that 96% or 97% of Black voting women in Alabama all know each other enough to text each other to say, make sure you vote a certain type of way. But I do think that when you lead from usually what is behind, when you lead from the back, you have a better view of the entire playing field. So we've seen these examples where even as individuals, not necessarily holding a title or holding any sort of authority, we lead as a demographic because it is clear what our attention is, what our intention is, rather. And what our attention is on. So like when we talk about that mayoral race in Chicago, this is going to be a game changer for Chicago. Chicago is known as one of the blackest cities in the country. Chicago gave us Carol Mosley Braun as a Black woman senator. And you have these examples. Michelle Obama is to be reckoned with in her own right. And she is a daughter of that city. Oprah is an adopted daughter of that city who is a billionaire, you know what I mean? A self-made billionaire. And what people have done with their energy and their resources, when you consider that the mayoralship, Rahm Emanuel's seat
mm-hmm.
is going to go to a Black woman who now will have some say-so over what happens with Chicago schools, what happens with Chicago's police department, what happens with their consent decrees and the outcomes of different cases and now it's going to be a set of eyes on it that is usually not empowered to direct the actions of these organizations and to speak to executive level influence on these organizations. This is what a time to be alive.
Yeah. And so I think that it's important to point out the fact that when there's a dominant group and there are dominant groups, and when that group is in power, they have behaved a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And they have behaved a certain way for so long that it becomes very difficult to imagine another way.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, those that are not in the dominant group, as you said, leading from the back, are there looking and saying, okay, this is the whole battlefield. I can see how these things could be better. And that's the reason why you see huge blocks, which I don't know of any other blocks that go that way, like that are that unanimous in terms of how they mm-hmm. vote. Like you said, without coordination. So
mm-hmm.
those groups that have not been in a dominant seat should have the chance to get there to at least show us a different way that we may not have been able to see ourselves.
Yeah.
Because those people who are not in a dominant group in the ideal situation, they don't want to get there to dominate.
Mm-hmm.
That's the hope.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't want, now there are always anomalies, but for the most part, you would expect that the person who has been oppressed
mm-hmm.
is not trying to oppress. Now, we will talk about an example where that's not true later in this show.
Okay.
But generally, that's the way it is. And mm-hmm. you figure the persons who have been most oppressed have a better perspective on how not or why that shouldn't happen to other people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, again, when you look at even what has happened with the 116th Congress, this newest Congress, where the highest number of women and the highest number of people of color are in the House of Representatives, those accolades obscure the fact that there is the highest number, I believe, of African American women in the House right now.
Mm-hmm.
And those experiences that they bring with them in their toolkit, when you're filling out a job application, they're like your knowledge, skills, and abilities. So when you think about the knowledge, skills, and abilities that a member of a marginalized, sometimes demonized, sometimes under-resourced, underappreciated, underutilized group, just the type of ingenuity that they have to problem solve or to secure resources that are not readily available. That particular wave, the wave within the wave, that's what I'm paying attention to, because how many more women of color are inspired to begin to engage their government institutions in a way like, I want to participate not just as a voter, but as someone who steers policy. You know, policies affect different groups different ways. And at the end of the day, Black women who are, even as they relate to one another and as they relate to Black men, it is a game changer to have those who have to nurse families through brokenness due to incarceration or due to street violence or police violence or any of those things. When you have a representative of the group that is the companion to, mm-hmm. you know, the group that's always talked about as far as just this overall demonization, targeting, or just underappreciation of Black men. Now, this is a big change, because now you're talking to mothers about their son. You're talking to Black mothers about what they want for their Black children. And when they begin to influence policies and influence policies, pop culture, and begin to tell their own story, and I take from you the power to tell my story, I'm going to tell my own story, you completely change the playing field. And we've seen it numerous times. And like I said, we're not really new to this as much as we are true to this. And it's just calling attention to everybody's leadership style is different. But this particular group has been doing some things behind the scenes. I feel like we dominate the behind the scenes.
So let's talk about how Black women have been leading since the beginning.
I mean, since the beginning, you know, I see our group as equal and opposite to the group that is currently in majority. And there's a unique history between Black women and white men that is not always investigated, and we don't always take it to the depth that it actually exists, as far as how have white men legislated specifically against Black women? How have they interacted through their laws, their practices? How have they benefited from the marginalization, the making sure that this person doesn't have power? How have you benefited from that? The economy that we benefit from even today. I've been dealing with this concept, but it runs through Black women's wombs. You understand? So, and that's a powerful statement, but it's like, what do you mean? So it means that even in leading from a slaveholding society, you know, we always say, oh, from slavery. But in a slaveholding society, it was already going to be, when you think about the culture in America at that time, women having property or having political say is neither here nor there, but having public political say. That is not to say that women did not have it behind the scenes. You know, the leaders of the earliest iterations of the women's movement, women's rights movement, had that power everywhere but where it counted. They did not have the vote. They were orchestrating their own speaker opportunities. They were collaborating with abolitionists. They were trying to create momentum. Mm-hmm. You know, let's get everybody some rights, because when we get everybody, then we'll get ours. At least that was, you know, part of the thought that they liked to promote. But I feel like the first thing we need to recognize and acknowledge is what Black women did as far as keeping families cohesive, even as structures emerged to blow them apart. Okay.
Yeah.
So a lot of that is cultural. It is maintaining culture. It is maintaining And this is not to say that Black men didn't do it, but we should talk about what women did. So through our crafts, we were able to ensure that we kept in contact and communication with each other. Through the development of our arts, we were able to make sure that there was expression, down to how you, when you think of everything being taken from a person or being taken from a people, and the fact that people retained skill that would say, to ensure that you would never starve, let me show you how to braid your hair and hold seed, you know, and show you how to till ground, show you how to keep children, show you how to keep kitchen, keep home. These are not things that, you know, some benevolent master taught. These are usually things that we taught, showed, role modeled to other groups. And they say, wow, you're really good at that. Why don't you just do that? You understand what I'm saying? I think that it is important to understand that even if literacy was out of reach, we still had Black women who used their voices, especially if they found themselves living in a free society. We do have people who emerged as voices for the voiceless, and that, and they were Black and female. And really what they were hoping to shed light upon was this idea that slaves or people of color were not women and men like their white counterpart. One often highlighted example of that is Sojourner Truth and the speech that is attributed to her, "Ain't I a Woman?" Now, we've already realized that some of those words were stretched to a certain imagination and stretched to fit a narrative. But at the core of it is a Black woman saying, "I am a woman just like this white woman." These words still resonate today because even after the end of slavery and even after Reconstruction, the fact that that tone was set meant that Black women always understood that they were going to have to further agitate to be seen as women, even amongst a group of women. That work that did not end. Just it did not necessarily begin with Sojourner Truth, because you do have examples of Black women holding property. You do have examples of Black women transferring property to their children without the facilitation of a husband, being able to inherit property from parents who are not of color. Okay. There is, and we're going to have to edit around this, but there's an example of a mixed race child who inherited her father's whole plantation because he manumitted her and raised her as his own. Mm-hmm. Even though we negotiate and we talk about consent, and consent cannot be given in certain situations, he did experience a loving relationship with her mother and freed her. Mm-hmm. But she is a woman, and he made her the largest landowner in a certain Alabama county or something. The date is what stands out to me. It was 1838. So this is almost a full 30 years before, 27 years before full emancipation, but she was a poor little rich Black girl. In Louisiana, we have numerous examples of Black women who created entrepreneurial endeavors around all sorts of work, not least of which was sex work. And believe it or not, the seeds that they sowed account for a lot of the wealth that was retained within free Black communities up until 1860. So yes, through different practices, and we're talking about regular individuals, but through different practices and different allowances and how to navigate hostile environments, you have these emerging faces, these examples of people who were just as enterprising, who had a lot of forethought, and who wanted to plan for their generations. And a lot of that was Black and female and leading. So we've been doing that.
You bring up the plantations, and leading from the back is the perfect way to put it in terms of being forced there. So for instance, you have men and women, male and female slaves, mm-hmm. men and women doing the work. Let's say you have an incident where that male slave is beaten for whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Who's helping that person?
Mm-hmm.
It's the woman. And then who's doing the work that slave can no longer do? Like, there's always a situation where women are present and active and not taking any laps off,
mm-hmm.
because that's just what we do. When when people come to a plantation that are new, whether they're new.
It's like orientation.
Right. Mm-hmm. That black women have been doing that since the beginning. They've been leading in our families forever.
Forever.
So that leading our churches, the churches are predominantly still, our black churches are still predominantly black women,
mm-hmm.
or majority black women.
Yeah.
Again, from the back, because the leadership does not reflect
the body.
Correct.
That it leads.
And so this is something that we're working to correct.
Mm-hmm.
But it's time for things like that to occur. But you see, like they still are influencing families, churches, and education. You know, you think through examples like Mary McLeod Bethune, who worked to actually establish education bodies for African Americans, and leading now in higher education degrees. And I know more black women PhDs
mm-hmm.
than any other group. I know more black women with masters than any other group. It's
hey.
It's just one of those things where you don't pay attention to it, and if you don't pay attention to it, you miss it, because those people who are highly educated are also highly qualified
mm-hmm.
to lead. So then the question becomes, why aren't they leading? And as we approach this time when we see more opportunities, we should be open to those opportunities.
Well, definitely. I mean, black women have emerged as, I believe, the demographic attending college at a higher rate. And like you said, obtaining certain levels of degrees just at a higher clip. Again, this is not to drag black men. We're just talking about what we're accomplishing here.
It's just the data.
This is, yeah, like, what is it? Men lie, women lie, but the numbers don't lie.
Yeah.
And it's right there.
And when I say that education is more than any other group, that's not just black men.
I mean, but that's also indicative of what we've had to do to overcome things like the gender gap in pay. When you consider the dual handicap of being both black and female, this means that you have to be prepared. So you think about that line of encouragement that we've given to our children. You have to be twice as good to get half as much, you know, to be recognized. You have to be three or four times as good to get what you are owed, what you actually have earned. You know, I don't even want to say owed, because people are like, oh, handouts. And, you know, did you really, affirmative action did it. These are asinine arguments when you finally see someone bubbling up past the barriers,
mm-hmm.
Both natural and artificial, that are placed in their way. So it's not enough. You know, I made this argument to one of those feel good nonprofits that, you know, has black friends. Okay. Where I said, you know, to recruit black children and to recruit black fellows at PWI institutions takes for granted that they've already made it passed a certain barrier to even be in the recruiting pool. When you don't give that same attention to recruiting potential fellows, right? When people talk about fellowships and educational feathers in their cap, and, you know, I've had this prestigious thing. When you don't, with intention, go to HBCUs, you're cutting out a whole large segment of black scholarship and black academic achievement. It is not enough to go to the PWI institution and say, oh my God, I recruited, you know, or I yielded a fellow who happens to be a black woman. Because when you do not go with intention to schools like Spelman, and you don't go with intention to schools like North Carolina A&T, and you don't go to FAMU, you are cutting them out of potential recruitment. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? And as I've gotten older, I realized that it wasn't that they didn't understand what I was saying. They were probably more mystified that I knew what I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
These types of barriers, when you overcome them, we've been told, you know, educate yourself, at least this generation, educate yourself, add things to your skill set, add things, you know, to your quiver, basically, you know, like what can you bring to the table? That's where you get multiple master's degrees from.
Mm-hmm.
Not because you love school, but because you want that last $25,000 in salary that eludes you, or you want to run toe to toe with people who say you don't have the experience because your degree is in the wrong area. You see what I mean? So it wasn't enough that you had a bachelor's in accounting. You had to go get an MBA for somebody to even treat you like a junior accountant. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I see this in an interesting way.
Mm-hmm.
So in seminary, I see this confluence of education and churches where black women could be leading. So in the seminary, there are black women who are parts of large denominations who already know that they're going to graduate with this MDiv, this Master's of Divinity, and not be able to be placed or not find a job. Mm-hmm. And they're still there, still doing the work, knowing that there's a ceiling that probably ends with a diploma. And then who knows what happens after that? White women have a similar situation, but not as bad, because in certain denominations, Episcopal Church and things like that, like you'll have white women as pastors. Mm-hmm. But like, say, in the AME church, the percentage is so low of black women pastors. And that's the largest, one of the largest black denominations.
Right.
It's even lower in Baptist churches.
Right.
It's even lower in Pentecostal churches. So you have these highly educated, highly qualified black women going in knowing, I'm just doing this because I believe this is what I should do. And that is inspiring to other people who are going in like, yo, I'm not going in for that. I'm going in for something else. But I'm looking at that level of determination. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yo, I got to be on my game because I need to be better.
Inspire you.
So, yeah, it's interesting to see that.
I feel like good leadership means you're prepared before your test comes. You understand what I'm saying? So it would be one thing if the churches began to throw open their doors. Oh, my gosh, we just want these excellent leaders. And then when you see the list of qualifications, you ain't got it because you didn't do that work prior to. You see what I mean? You're making a different argument when you say, here are 100 black women holding the MDiv who are not in these senior leadership positions within their denominations or within their large, these larger churches. You know, episodes ago, I talked about the fact that I was able to look at like a big Jubilee program and you have black and female faces everywhere. But the one picture of the elders of the church was all black men. And at that point, certain things that I had experienced in that body made so much sense to me because it was based on decisions made by people who didn't look anything like me and who didn't, whose experience could not possibly be like mine because they discount the fact that gender matters. You understand what I'm saying? It doesn't matter in certain ways because can't you do hospitality? But then it matters when you're trying to tell me how to, you know, go about orchestrating the saving of souls or go about orchestrating high praise and worship experiences or go about orchestrating authenticity in this exchange of information. I believe that, again, when you leave from behind, you've seen people fall on their face because they talked a good game and they were not ready to be in true leadership. They were not ready. They wanted all the power, but they didn't want to do any of the preparation. And when their lack of preparation ends up affecting you. Now, you're talking about what have we done across generations and across hundreds of years? I am so sure that because we are thinking people and feeling people and observant people, you know, we watch somebody squander away their inheritance, knowing that when it was time for those bills to come due, we would be the commodities to make the bills, you know what I'm saying, to make the debt go away, right? So when you see that, you end up wanting to be a neck. A neck meaning, okay, I know who the head is. I can't change who the head is. But I want to just be able to gently guide you and say, you know, maybe you don't want to, you know, do that. Maybe you don't even want to plant over there. Maybe you don't want to build a brand new house. Maybe you don't. I wholeheartedly believe, like, it's not just that we were birthing our way out of, you know, birthing our way into the top economy, okay? I also believe that we were next along the way. Here's how you really treat money, because nobody even asks me how I treat money because nobody thinks I have any. Nobody thinks that I, you know, would have a vested interest. But you know what I don't want to see you do? I don't want to see you sell my damn son nowhere. So I'm just going to slightly do this way. You know what I mean? And I'm going to put it out there to maybe your wife. I don't know. You know what I mean? But it's that. Quiet advisement. Now, when you are free, you know, or when you are able to make decisions for yourself, let's not talk about just a time period that is, you know, since gone away. Let's talk about what it means to really have autonomy over yourself. You conduct yourself a different way. So when you have not been able to openly or readily or steadily or consistently rely on other entities to support you, you find another way to do this thing, right? So again, being prepared before you are given the reins to run it. That says a lot, because you cannot ignore 100 people at the ready to help you without you finally understanding why you haven't asked them for their help. Why don't you value what they're bringing to the table? Why are you willing to take the person who did some correspondence course or just did not study to really show themselves approved? Mm-hmm. Why are you so willing to do that? And what type of comfort do you find in a room full of men?
So we talked about families, and in churches, this is also an argument, but we have to deal with these emasculation arguments that serve as a barrier whenever women start to arise to positions of leadership. And this is, as I said earlier, this is one of those examples where the oppressor or the oppressed is acting like the oppressor in the case of black men who are consistently bringing up the emasculation of black men.
Right.
And usually that is couched as an argument against women. So that's women raising black boys. Mm-hmm. You'll hear
that's
something like
a conversation for y'all homeboys that don't raise their kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
Period.
So you'll see stuff like a black woman can't teach a boy to be mm-hmm. a man.
Tell his father. Anyway.
Yeah, amen. If a black woman is leading church, let's say, you know, the worship experience will be too emotional, or words that are coded for, you know.
No, I understand that. You know, I just had a conversation yesterday with somebody who told me, you know, I've been through something very, very harrowing. And I just asked him, I said, oh, well, how is your soul? You know, how are you feeling? Mm-hmm. And he said, that is the best question. Long story short, he had a work experience in Europe and it just opened his eyes to a lot of things. But he said, that is the best question anybody has asked me since I returned. Like, no one's asked me, how is your soul? Now, how do I know how to ask a question like that besides just being thoughtful or compassionate or caring enough to frame it that way? Mm-hmm. But I knew that the pain that he was carrying was not tangible. The feelings, the residuals were not things that you would see like, oh, wow, you got this big gash on your arm. Do you want to put a Band-Aid on it? You know, mm-hmm. or you're limping. What happened? Nah, you're carrying some things in your soul because you've seen some things. Now, I'm not saying that another man could not ask that question. I'm saying that nobody did. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? Because it's the question that I would have wanted to hear at different junctures. Like, it's not me. I'm functioning. Ask me how I'm doing on the inside. Ask me how my mind is. Ask me how my soul is feeling, because that's where I carry my weight. You see what I mean? Now, you want to say, not you personally, but people who argue, oh, it'll be so emotional. Yo, there's so many people out here not feeling anything.
And that's part of the problem.
Yeah. So imagine being put in a position of modeling where you could be free, like probably what you see. I used to love looking around church like, ooh, who's shouting? Who's shouting? Because I didn't understand it, right? But now when I see it, I'm like, wow, what a feeling of freedom. Huh? I do not busy myself with how you got there, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not concerned about that. But that to me is such a moment of communion and worship and freedom in spirit, mm-hmm. that you're not overly concerned with who's observing you. You see what I mean?
Yeah. The problem with that argument, too, it also presupposes that all women are emotional.
Which is a lie.
Right. Now, I know some straight-up scholars that probably would not lead an emotional worship service, but mm-hmm. they would teach your ass a lot. Like, you would learn a lot just mm-hmm. by listening. So things like that just kind of bother me in terms of, because if you're going to make an argument about emasculating men, what mm-hmm. you have to have first is a working definition of masculinity.
Yep.
Which we do not have. Those nope. people who make the argument do not, they cannot articulate their definition of masculinity. Mm-hmm. And even if they could, the person that they're talking to would probably have a different definition of it.
Yeah, because it's relative.
So what are we afraid of that's going to happen? So you saw with Billy Porter, where people are like, he's in a tuxedo dress.
One dress.
First of all, Dream is incredible. When I saw it, I was like, oh my God.
It was perfectly cut. It was the first thing that I noticed was how flawless the design was. It's not even like his little tuxedo ball gown dress was messy, y'all. Like, really?
Yeah. So for the people who are listening to this 3 years from now, this is the 2019 Oscars. Billy Porter wore a tuxedo dress.
And turned it out. Turned it out. I mean.
But are they afraid? So they saying you emasculate men and they holding that up.
They
as
think
examples.
That that's contagious.
But Billy Porter is a gay man, is dressing and doing his own thing.
And so I do think that part of that argument, we talk about the fear. The fears might be people who don't really feel free to be, right? So sometimes it is intimidating. You gotta understand. The intimidation of somebody literally living their best life or looking like they have has cost people their lives.
Yes.
Right. So it is something that we can prove across, you know, different historical events. You don't have a Black Wall Street burning down unless you have these visible iterations of people looking like they are living without your permission. They are living at a certain level. And having a certain access to luxury or a certain access to resource. I don't even want to call it luxury, but having certain access to resources and you didn't give them permission to have it. Mm-hmm. Shit don't burn down because it's not threatening. It burns down because it's threatening. You know, people lose their lives, not because they're inconsequential, but because they have a bigger impact. They have more power than you would think. Right. Mm-hmm. So. Again, even just watching how, you know, social media is trash. Okay, I'll give you that. But watching people intentionally skip over the artist's handiwork in making the dress because you are trying to die on the hill of a man in a dress. And it's like, so to a woman like me, don't do this to me. Don't do it when I have time. I ain't doing nothing but getting ready to go to bed. No man, in a dress looks like the men. That I can, you know, accord certain offenses to, right? Yeah. So it's definitely not him.
It's such a stupid argument because if you're gay, you're gay. If you're straight, you're straight. If you're bi, if you're pan, if whatever it is.
Whatever it is, that's whatever you are.
Gay people have been living amongst heterosexual people their entire lives and they're still gay. It doesn't rub off.
All this time.
It's not a thing that's going to happen to you.
No. Now, I do think that people are conflating their fears about their own sexual image and sexual orientation. And I'm not saying that everybody who has an issue with this is repressed or anything like that. But sex is one of those things that's hard in this community to talk about. We talked about how it's hard even for Black women to own their own sexuality. So, you know, this goes along the same line. Anybody critiquing that, that's the same person who would critique me on whether or not my skirt is too short or too long. I didn't fucking ask you. I didn't ask you.
So when we think through critical analysis of these emasculating arguments where we mentioned, you know, Black women can't teach a boy to be a man. There's a lot of adult males that were raised by Black women. So are we saying they're not men? There are a lot of men mm-hmm. who were raised with men around that still have a lot of learning to do, like myself. The question is, who's teaching these people? What are they teaching? What are the examples that they're setting?
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to be able to blame Black women.
For everything.
You got to stop that. they didn't do it. Whatever you
for
think they did, they didn't do
like,
it.
My dude, I just woke up just like you. Like, I'm over it. But okay.
There's no master plan.
So, and here's my thing. Like, I'm even willing to play 50. Like, even if there was, what is it going to take for y'all to talk to y'all male counterparts who are not doing the things that you think would counteract the energy? You see what I'm saying? Do not allow, and this has probably come up another time, but I'm passionate about this. Do not skip over your homeboy. Mm-hmm. Please do not skip over your cousin. Do not skip over, you know, your father. Or your brother, please do not skip over them to talk to the women in their life when things are going wrong in their own lane. Don't do that to the woman. You know, why aren't you better? Why is he like this? Please do not skip over him trying to talk to me. And there's a lot of repelling of that energy because, you know, we say, you know, Black women are tired, but like, no, seriously, this is one of the most tired things because you never know what you're going to get. We are not going to pigeonhole. We are not going to stereotype. black men like they're not doing anything right. First of all, believe the best about yourself. But y'all know the daggone difference between performance and actually building and doing. You know, I can perform parenthood. I can put pictures up on social media. Oh, I was with my kids. Da-da-da. People steal pictures of their kids from the other parent all the time. Don't talk to me about why a family is broken if you have not talked to another person about why they won't put it together. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We've talked about this, and not everybody is striving for marriage, and you know, certain things work for certain people, but this idea that black women, when they do not come under heel of mediocre counterparts and romantic partners or family members, mediocre, don't skip over them to talk to me. I'm trying to survive that too.
Everybody got problems. Everybody got work to do. And we're talking about black women here and affirming black women and things like that. And black women have problems too.
You're right.
So because but everyone nobody has stops problems,
for our tears.
Right. Because everyone has problems, you should recognize your own problems. Deal with your own problems.
That's
deal
it.
With your, like, don't project that on someone else. Like, you got stuff that you need to be working on. Even, you know what I'm saying, whether you're in... if you're in a queer relationship and it's two women, you know, everybody got something they need to be doing better. It, because the way relationships work, you are probably perfect for yourself, which is why you're by yourself. But if you want to be in a relationship with somebody else, somebody needs to make some adjustments.
You really do. And it's not going to be, you know, one time I had made, I don't want to get off subject.
No, we're not. This is a,
I don't want to get off subject, but we got to come back to this because I don't want us to get stuck here, but at the end of this,
we're almost done. We gotta hurry up.
Yeah, I think that this is something that bears some reckoning and some deeper dives, because there's nothing that's gonna happen outside in our communities that is not first happening in our homes. So we have certain homes. We have certain homes and neighborhoods and schools and communities that are producing healthy connections between our people, that are propelling people who are worthy of leadership to where they need to be. You know, people are getting to their rightful place so that they can do what their live out their purpose and do what they're supposed to do. Likewise, there are people who are constantly running up against barriers, and it could be anybody doing that. And my thing is, we have to be intentional about developing excellence. You are not going to develop excellence letting people get away with being full of shit. Period.
That's true.
So we don't get black women leading and talking about, you know, all the different ways that we lead, unless you really want to, you know, if we were having a more grimy conversation, it's like, so how much bullshit did you get over so that you could really be who you were purposed to be?
Right.
That's really what we're talking about in all these different, you know, aspects of our society. Well, Dag says when it comes to, you know, the church life, when it comes to educational institutions, when it comes to leading in government, when it comes to leading in business. Yo, how much shit did you have to go through before somebody finally just said, let her do it?
Wow. Yeah, we was going to talk about a whole bunch of other
stuff.
We've gone out of time. So I think it's important at this point in American history, which is what we're living in, to consider what it's like to be so that's the thing that I always want people to at least be intentional about. Like, be led by people that haven't led. So it's okay to look for opportunities like that. Like, whether that's your church, whether that's your job, like, relish those opportunities to be in a position where you're not the dominant voice.
Even if you're not relishing them, just don't wholesale avoid them.
Right.
You know, there is a quote by Margaret Mead that says, if the cure for cancer is in the mind of a girl, we might not ever find it. And really what she is referencing is the fact that there are so many natural and artificial barriers to engaging female minds in science, in hardcore sciences, that if somebody could figure it out, we might not ever know, because there are so many different places to lose her along the way before she even gets a chance to get to college. There's so many places to lose her. I learned about that. When I learned about it, I was fascinated, because words mean things. Language means things. And, you know, when a young girl is saying, oh, I want to be a teacher because my chemistry teacher was my favorite teacher, she's like, I want to be a teacher. She is totally overshot the fact that she is interested in chemistry.
Right.
And having the right conversation with the right mentor, or the right person pouring into her, I can make you an engineer. And you can teach chemistry whenever you want. You see what I mean? I make you a chemical engineer as a Black woman. I'm upending some of the data sets that say that you won't be able to own a home. I'm upending some of the data. If the data says that you are more likely to have a single parent led home, I'd much rather you have engineer income than anything else. I'm not going to take it from anywhere else. I'm not going to shame anybody else's salary level. But if the data says that you might be most likely to do this by yourself for X amount of years, longer than your white and female peers, would you rather be making 85 or 55?
Now that you mention it, I also know more Black women scientists than any other group. Like,
because we ain't playing with y'all.
I just know a lot of Black women. What is?
We gotta go to work.
Y'all are out here crushing it. So consider, look at your lives. Consider the spaces where you have Black women that are actually leading.
Yeah.
And if you don't have any, there's spaces out there that you could find and at least see what that experience is
exactly.
like.
Exactly. And don't be fearful. Let her share with you, and don't take anything from her. Don't explain to her how you know what she knows. Stop it. I had somebody equate their interest in history with my degree, and I'm still offended. Mm.
Just a history hobbyist.
You know, I like history, you know, and I know you like it too.
It's not the same.
Mm-mm. No. Don't do that. Don't do that. Because I understand what you mean, but I'm not sure that you would do that so easily to someone else. Like, I wouldn't say, oh, because I played Pac-Man, I understand how to code. You understand what I'm right. saying? Like, I just wouldn't do that.
So when Black women lead, it's a beautiful thing. Shout out to Solange for leading everybody back to Black Planet this week. She popped up out of her hiatus.
Yes.
And just say one thing about Black Planet, and everyone went and created their accounts and reopened their accounts, and my password
and
was still.
And that's power.
Active. That's crazy. So
that's power.
And everyone over there is like really excited. Like, we want to do this. The app is not good right now, but they like, yo, we
trash,
can fix this.
But we waiting. Yeah.
All right, y'all. We'll catch y'all next week for Faith
we'll
Uncut.
We'll figure it out.
I'm your host, Mike.
I'm Amara.
For more on Faith Uncut, check us out at faithuncut.com.